addressing how African people are participating in globalization, ways in which the rest of the world continues to exploit African resources, uncovering labor violations by corrupt politicians and Western government powers, learn what's happening now in interviews with artists, activists, scholars, and a host of other experts each episode. Listen Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Africa Now is also available from iTunes Podcast, Google Play Music, as well as SoundCloud on your station for Jazz and Justice, WPFW, Washington.
I'm Kamaya.
I'm Amira.
I'm Kaya.
I'm Kamaya.
And you're listening to WPFW, Washington.
Another man done gone. Another man done gone from the county farm. Another man done gone.
Huh? I don't know. What? I'm just going across the street.
Shut your mouth.
Oh, no. What'd I do?
Turn around. Put your hands behind your back. Let's go.
The jury of your peers having found you guilty. 10 years.
What?
Come on. Get that set.
I was in jail, too, man. It's cold-blooded in the jail. You go down there looking for justice. That's what you find. Just us.
Welcome to another edition of Crossroads Today. Now here's your host, Roach Brown.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us on our weekly Tuesday morning show here on Crossroads on WPFW 89.3 FM, your station for jazz and justice. WPFW is a part of the Pacifica Radio Network, which is about five stations across the country. And we are heard worldwide. So thanks to all the folk who've written in letters, emails, texts, etc., commenting on a different show. So thank you. And this morning we have another interesting show that we need you to listen to and hopefully join in. But before we start, we open up with what we call the grapevine, information that you can use. The grapevine. Hey. Incarcerated firefighters do risky, low-paid work. Many say it's the best job behind bars. More than 900 incarcerated firefighters were responding as of Friday to the fires in Southern California. Where is that? Right, I lost my thing. Historically, incarcerated firefighters have made up as much as 30% of the California wildfire force, according to the LA Times. Last summer, with only about half of the budget hand crews fully staffed, some in the state worried that the reductions could affect the state's ability to contain fires. And of course, there are ways to staff hand crews without increasing prison labor. The salary these guys get for being in prison, working on the fire crews in California, the incarcerated fire crew members make between $5.80 and $10.24 per day.
Yeah.
And earn an additional $1 per hour when responding to emergencies, up to $26.96 over a 24-hour shift.
Mm-hmm.
Legally, one of the reasons that the state can pay incarcerated firefighters around $1 an hour for this dangerous and vital work is that under the U.S. and California constitutions, involuntary servitude is permitted as punishment for a crime. That's the 13th Amendment.
That's right.
While the pay is low compared with wages in the free world, firefighters' work is often the best paying prison labor job available. Which is one reason why it's sought after. And that is the thing we talked about, the California firefighters. And believe me, folks, you think somebody worked on the fire line for 5 years fighting fires and they get released and they can't get a job with the same fire department.
That's right.
Because they got a criminal record. But they were convicted criminal while they were in prison and working on it. So this jiggy-boogie continues, people. Inmates abused by correction officers and the legal recourse available. Contrary to popular belief, inmates abuse is not a thing of the past. Misconduct and excessive force against inmates still occur today, like what happened last week in New York City and throughout the country. Correctional facilities such as the New York facility have recently landed in the news for the egregious inmate abuse occurring within their walls. And folk, this is a topic that's close to my heart. I was abused and beaten inside a prison, and there's dozens of cases across the country of guards who are gangs running around beating people. We just saw it last week up in New York, 14 people. In New York City, Hagerstown, there's a gang of white correction officers terrorizing the prison. In Chicago, it's called the Orange Crush. There's cases like this all over the country of correctional staff beating, brutalizing, and killing folk. And as a result of that, I was brutalized. So this topic has a sensitive spot in my heart. I was beaten severely for 3 days. I was placed in solitary. I was transferred from there to the insane asylum for another 3 years. And I had a three-day whipping. And folk, please, all the loved ones, families, wives, and families of people in prison, I know you don't want to complain because you're afraid that they'll be retaliated against. They're retaliating them against them anyway, whether you complain or not. So please, folk, call the ACLU, and every city has an ACLU you can file. This is a Eighth Amendment violation, cruel and unusual punishment. And I'm glad to see that these cases are coming to the forefront. People are winning suits, but this is something that needs to be dealt with. They are guards or terrorizing inmates in prison. Besides the time you're doing, you're getting whippings that destroy your life or maybe kill you, like the guy Brooks in New York City. So, folks, please, this is not something that we take lightly. Complain, complain, do whatever you got to do to stop this abuse inside these institutions. And lastly, support policies that are best for Maryland's kids. Maryland's legislature passed regressive youth justice legislation that prioritized retribution over rehabilitation. The law, HB 814, will be bad for Maryland's kids and will increase existing racial disparities in the youth justice system. And lastly, in fiscal year 2022, only 290, I'm going to repeat, 290 cases out of 71,000 defendants in federal criminal cases, about 0.4% went to trial and were acquitted. The overwhelming majority of defendants in federal criminal cases that year did not go to trial. About 9 in 10 people plead guilty. So there's very few federal trials because of the extreme sentencing laws and mandatory minimums. 98% of everybody getting arrested go to the federal court pleads guilty. Because if you don't, they're going to knock your socks off. And this is what they've been talking about. So that's been the grapevine information that you can use. Just wanted to share that with you. And this morning, joining us and who's chairing this show is none other than our extreme co-host, Nikeisha Taifa. Joining me, Nikeisha, is my wife, Mertine, and I. And we were talking about from Martin Luther King to Imam Jamil Al-Amin, the struggle continues. Go ahead, Nikeisha Taifa.
Thank you so very much, Brand. And, you know, this is the week that we should be honoring Martin Luther King and all of our freedom fighters 365 days a year. But this is the week that the U.S. government has set aside, you know, for that honoring. And we thought that the best way to do that is to show that the things that he was talking about and the things that he was struggling about and the entities that were against him are still going on today. The struggle still continues. For those who might remember the COINTELPRO, the FBI's one secret illegal campaign to disrupt and destroy the movement, Martin Luther King was one of the key persons that was targeted by the FBI unjustly, and H.Rap Brown was someone else. And H.Rap Brown, the struggle still continues. He is now known as Imam Jamil Al-Amin. And we have some phenomenal guests that's going to be joining us today to talk about that. And we're going to, I really just want to start with the COINTELPRO and also broach any specific memories you have, because I know that you I personally met H.Rap Brown, but let me go on and introduce our guests right now, and then we can go into a collective discussion up in here. So we have our dear sister, longtime struggler, Sister Shafia Mbalia, someone who has been a stalwart in activism for decades upon decades upon decades. She is part of the Black Workers for Justice. But with the context of this show, she is the Southern Regional Coordinator of the Imam Jamil Al-Amin Action Network. And joining her, originally joining her, was going to be Bob's brother, Jihad Abdul Bumit, also a part of the network, but also the chairperson of the Jericho Movement for Political Prisoners. We're all really part of Jericho. I know Shafia is as well as I am. Yeah. And our dear brother from right here, the belly of the beast, Washington, D.C., again, long distance runner, Brother Kokai. I mean, Brother Kokai has been instrumental in educating the public in terms of issues of detoxification and how that can be, acupuncture can be used for that. He is the head of the ADS Collective. He is a holistic health practitioner. And the doctor, what's the doctor, Dr. Matulu Shakur, the doctor, Brother Bilal Suni Ali, the doctor, Brother Sekou Odinga, the list goes on and on of our political prisoners that he treated. So welcome, Shafia and Kokai.
And thank you for joining
peace
us.
And blessings.
Thank you for joining. Thank you. Thank you.
And our dear brother Jihad is in Africa right now, so he wasn't able to join us. But before we get into it, I want to turn it back to my phenomenal host of Crossroads, Roach Brown, because we're going to be talking about the person once known as H. Rap Brown. Many people think, oh, is he still alive? He's definitely still alive. But let's just go back to the name that most people know, H. Rap Brown. And Roach, can you share with us any of your memories back in the day?
Well, I ran into H. Rap Brown over in Cambridge, Maryland, when somebody got killed or lynched. And it was a big riot in Cambridge, Maryland, which is the birthplace of Harriet Tubman. And H. Rap Brown was credited with the slang, "Burn, baby, burn." He was tired of what was going on to our folk. And I'm hurt, man. I mean, I'm really, really hurt that somebody who risked his life for us, Stokely Carmack and all the rest of these guys, and now we're forgetting them because they did this 30, 40, 50 years ago. This new generation don't know nothing about them. And now this man need our help. And he risked his entire life and future to make things better for us, to get rid of some of this unjust things we've been going through. And now he needs our help. And I just want to share this. For who I was working on this committee with, Amin, please, you have something that we can use that you haven't been using. The Supreme Court ruled in 1976 that the only people in society who has a constitutional right to medical care are inmates. And this man is being denied the right to medical care. He's suffering from all kinds of ailments. And we need whoever working on the committee, please. The case is called Estelle versus Gamble. Estelle versus Gamble, 1976. Please check it out. You can file a case to the courts to get them to enforce this law to get this man some medical treatment. Because if we don't, we know what's going to happen, man. Our people are just dying in these joints. And I'm sad that he risked his life for our community. And the community don't even say good morning or share into his release.
Mm-hmm. So, Roach, thank you for that. And before we get into the current medical issues confronting our dear brother, Imam Jamil Al-Amin, also known as H. Rap Brown, Sister Shafia and Brother Kokai, can you kind of bring us up to date as we talked about the struggle continues? Well, what's in the interim between who we knew as H. Rap Brown and Imam Jamil Al-Amin? He's not in prison from the 60s right now today, though he had been in and out of a prison. But what is it that brought us to the situation we are in today where he is currently incarcerated unjustly?
Let me ask one quick question. Roach, please give me the name of that case again, Estelle versus
Gamble. It's a Supreme Court case. Famous Gamble. Estelle Estelle versus Gamble, G-A-M-B-L-E.
And Katie, we're going to put you to work, sis.
Thank you so much. Thank you all. Thank you all. You know, let me, before I turn it over to Shafia, just briefly, you know, just talk about the fact that in the 60s, I was on drugs. And in 1970, you know, 71, I picked up a book, Autobiography of Malcolm X, and the organization I was with, we were involved with the Black Panther Party back in that day. And the same issues that we were dealing with then, doing free food programs, free clothing programs, going through the community, linking with other organizations like with Marion Barry, with the Rat Patrol, and doing things deep into the hood, which is what Rap Brown represented. So we knew of him. I never got a chance to meet him. My mentor, Ron Clark, met him, but I didn't get a chance to meet him that day that he brought him to Washington, D.C. But again, here's an individual who grew up, you know, in the hood, made some decisions, and then changed those decisions and got involved with the political movement, the BPP. And as a result of that, was targeted, was shot and shot and wounded on two separate occasions, served time in jail, decided to change his state of mind and become a spiritual representative of our community, of our movement. And in doing so, was able to bring about tremendous change in the Atlanta community, where individuals could walk down the street with their pocketbooks and not worry about getting robbed, that they didn't have to worry about their children being accosted by drug dealers or criminals in the neighborhood. And because of that, again, he was targeted again for doing and resolving some of the conditions that were created as a result of racism. And here we have a brother that's in jail who is still our leader. We still follow him. And he's written a book, Revolution by the Book. If you haven't gotten that, please pick it up. It's a specific journal where he talks about how to work on these problems in our community from a spiritual position. And for those who need a little bit of history, pick up the book, Look for Me in the Whirlwind. It gives a pretty good synopsis of our movement and our struggle and brings it up to date. I yield, Shafia.
So here, Sophia.
Yes, Shafia. Brother, thank you. First of all, thank you again, Brother Wilkes. I've heard your name for years and years, so it is our honor to be able to be on the show with you. And just in case, you're going to put you to work on that with that, pulling up that cancer, so you know you in trouble. Before I talk about, before I raise about how I, in fact, I only had a chance to meet Imam Jamil very quickly, but for a tiny bit of time. But what I want to say first is that there's a reason why people don't know that H. Rap Brown is still alive and has changed his name and become Jamil Alameen with the title of Imam, which means a spiritual leader. You know, COINTELPRO is alive and well under different names, under different forms. Ever since Imam Jamil had a case in the year 2000, he has been under an informal gag order by the U.S. system, first by the court in which he was a trial, where he was not allowed to speak about anything except exactly about the case. And ever since he's been incarcerated, prison officials have not allowed him to speak, not allowed public writings, not allowed journalists to interview him, not allowed academics and historians to meet him, despite the fact that the role that he played in the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee for years, despite the years that he rode the roads of Alabama, Mississippi, but primarily Alabama, despite the fact that he's the fifth chairman of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, despite the fact that he was one of the folks who dealing with youth and bringing inspiring gang peace summits in the 1990s, despite the fact that he has was instrumental in the cleanup of West End in Atlanta. So there's a real reason why folks don't know him, because they have not been allowed to hear his voice, which is one of his primary weapons, because he was always and is always known to be able to cut to the chase, to speak truth to power, to break down all these kinds of principles and elements and break it down to folks and cut to the chase with it. And so there's a reason. COINTELPRO does not allow all these 25 years, going on 25 years, it would be 25 years in March that he will have been in custody. And they have refused to allow. There's only been one journalist who has been open to be able to see him, and they had to file a First Amendment or at least threaten to file a First Amendment lawsuit against the Bureau of Prison to be able to interview him. And even when he was able to interview him, he was not allowed to play the interview that people would hear Imam Jamil's voice to the public. He could talk about the interview itself, but he could not play the interview that he did with Imam Jamil. So there's a real reason how, you know, the Bureau of Prisons and the federal government are still actively working to silence this brother and silence our movement. And so we can't take our work out of context about, you know, being under that kind of threat, that kind of, you know, declaration of war, because that is essentially what that is. And that's why we're also going to throw out that we're going to be in front of the Bureau of Prisons this coming Friday at 3 o'clock to do a vigil to force to raise the pressure on the Bureau of Prisons to give treatment to this brother. Every time he's gotten treatment, it's only been because of the public beginning to call into the Bureau of Prisons and write letters and do a campaign. It happened first in order for him to get treatment for throat diagnosis and treatment for multiple myeloma, and then again about cataracts. And now he has this thing, I call it this thing, on the side of his face that is sitting out. When we saw it was about the size of a baseball. We've been told it's larger, and it has impeded his ability to eat and his ability to speak. He's 81 years old, and he's living off of Ensure and Noodle. That's horrendous. It's a violation of human rights. A federal lawsuit has been filed of cruel and unusual punishment. But these are the kinds of conditions. So when Brother Roach Brown talks about, you know, the beatings and the inhumane treatment and the torture, this is the kind of things that Imam Jamil has consistently had to deal with. And I'll yield for a minute.
So we're going to get into the specifics of the demonstration in front of Bureau of Prisons. Before we do, this is a direct continuation of the COINTELPRO. Yep. The FBI specifically said to expose, disrupt, misdirect, discredit, and otherwise neutralize the activities of Black people, okay, and their leadership and their spokesmen, right, and their supporters. And not only Martin Luther King, but H. Rap Brown, now known as Imam Jamil Al-Amin, was a key target of that COINTELPRO. He was about 25 years ago, I think, as you said, unjustly convicted, mm-hmm, of the killing of a police officer, despite, mm-hmm, the fact that he was not present at the scene, despite the fact that there's both court and video testimony from the person who admitted to committing the crime, despite the fact, as Shafi said, that he's battling a cancer and seeking medical transfer and compassionate release. Despite all of these things, he's essentially, yeah, being held incommunicado. Yeah. Martina, I think you were about to make a point as well. You're on mute. I think you're on mute. At least I don't hear you. It doesn't look like you're on mute, but we can hear you.
Yeah, go ahead.
Can you hear me now?
Louder. Oh, okay. Microphones. I use Boach's mic.
Yeah.
Okay, what up? Okay,
Let me just throw in real quick while we wait for her to join in that when you talk about COINTELPRO wanting to neutralize, everybody needs to be clear that neutralize, another word for that means to kill them, to assassinate.
That's right. That's right.
And this is what they've been doing, assassinating our leaders. And what happens now in the Black community is because of the misinformation and the lack of information that people have not received over the last two or three decades about stuff. You know, people don't even know that this exists. They know about political prisoners in other countries, and they actually send money to Ukraine and other places where they have political prisoners, but not thinking that this so-called do-good country has political prisoners. But there are some of us who don't agree with the way that Black people are treated in this country.
You know, at the top of the show, when I read some of the pieces on the grapevine about what's going on in prisons all over the country, there's been a lot of killings all over this country with George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, and et cetera. This is happening in prisons. And when guards come in, like H-Rap Brown, who are militant, who don't bite, who don't kiss their butt, who's not afraid to stand tall.
Yeah.
These guys are dogging. I'm looking at a picture of a man right now with a bump on the side of his face that looked like a grapefruit.
A grapefruit. That's right.
And the picture beside him is when he was in his 30s. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can see, but when I said at the beginning, I'm hurt, man. I'm really hurt that him, the MOVE families, we got so many people who are still locked up for their political beliefs, not because they committed crime. We heard yesterday that was, I heard something yesterday was Supreme Jiggy Boogie. That somebody said that the fires that's jumping and coughing California are being caused by the Native Americans.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
That the Indians are blocking up their creeks and the rivers to keep the waters from flowing. Now, that's Jiggy Boogie. This is the same kind of Jiggy Boogie they use to lock him up for these crimes that he didn't commit.
Yes.
They might as well accuse him of starting the fires in California, even though he's in prison. Right. I wouldn't be surprised they tried to indict him for starting the fires.
Actually, it's interesting. That's exactly what they did in the 60s. They took a speech that he said, burn, baby, burn, and said that he was responsible for the rebellions that struck out. I mean, you know, it's Supreme
Boogie.
Boogie Boogie. I like that. You know,
yeah, Martine, I think we can hear you. Oh no, we can't. I thought we could.
We live in an America that it was against the law for us to learn how to read and write.
Yeah.
We couldn't grow crops. This is after slavery. We couldn't grow animals. Nothing has changed. We still live in a country that goes out of its way to hurt us. Mm-hmm. It's one thing not to help people, but to go out of your way to hurt them, the redlining, the refusing the right to vote. This is the America we live in. We have to have a new attitude because we have power. We need to come together, black folks.
Yeah.
Stop hating on each other, what the man want us to do, and understand who we are as a people. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So I like to say that I wish that we'd have got, we'd have worked on this a little sooner.
Yeah.
Demonstration this Friday, January the 17th at 3 p.m.
Yes.
In front of the Borough Prisons, 321st Street Northwest.
Yeah.
That's right down across the street from the shelter.
Yes.
And that's amazing. It's right across the street from the shelter.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is like if Martin Luther King's speeches were not recorded and we heard about him, and this man risked his life for us.
Yes.
And we say, hey, who is Martin Luther King? You saying, who is Jameel Al-Amin? This man risked his life, him and Stokely Carmichael and the lady over in Baltimore in Cambridge named Vera Welcome. She was the state representative.
Mm-hmm.
And they protested the lynching or the killing of somebody over in Cambridge in 63 and 67.
Yes.
We need to honor and support our leaders. Even though you don't know them, you didn't heard about them. People, these people risked their life for us. Now they're dying. And we need you to step up to say, let this man out, let him die with some dignity and some peace, and let him die at home with his
family. Not let him die by medical neglect. What's happening now is death by medical neglect. We must really rally against that.
We have the Jameel Action Network that you know, we want folk to be in contact with, JameelActionNetwork.com. We want to give out this phone number, 202-520-9997. And that's the Imam Jameel Action Network.com. I just wanted to throw that in while we continue on, but be clear that the struggle definitely continues. As in Kiki said at the beginning, my work with Dr. Mutulu Shakur, who fought 7 years of cancer when he came out, and I shot out there and worked on him for 5 or 6 months. And, you know, we kept him around. Same work with Sekou Odinga, who had surgery in his neck, and the same thing with Bilal Suni Ali, who just transitioned. And as she stated, being their physicians, as a result of their time in jail, you know, the effects of serving that time in jail. And then you put on top of that the effects of their commitment to just working 24 hours a day, just like you, Roach and Martine and Nkechi and Shafi and myself. We just 7 days, ain't no days off for us, you know, and we do it decade after decade after decade. What I shared with Bilal and Sekou and Mutulu, that struggle also breaks us down. And we only struggle because the powers that be force us in a position where we have to do extra work, force us in a position where we have to be oxen and mules, you know, for the people and carry that burden on our back, as the Panthers would say back in the 60s. We have to be an oxen for the people and carry their burden. So family, you know, gang, Roach, you know, thank you and Keechee and Martine for your work and being consistent in what we're doing, and definitely the PFW family.
It is so important. The issue, the thing of information, information is power. When our people have information, they move.
Yes.
They proved that, you know, when thousands of people raised money and they marched in the street and they wrote letters, even about Mandela, Nelson Mandela, as Kakai was talking about, you know, for us folks in other countries, recognizing, you know, that and this generational gap, not recognizing that, yes, we have a Black liberation movement along with other movements inside this country for liberation. We have political prisoners. I just want to also throw out there for folks who are not able to come Friday at 3 o'clock in front of the Bureau of Prisons that there is a phone campaign into the Bureau of Prisons. That number is 520-663-5000. That goes into USP Tucson, where Imam Jamil is being held. You may not be able to talk to anyone, or they may, as soon as you name it, they may cut you off. Yep. But it's really important to make those phone calls.
Give that number.
That number again is 520-663-5000. 520-663-5000.
So before we continue, I just want to do a brief station ID. You're listening to WPFW Pacifica Radio. This is Crossroads program hosted by Roach Brown, his beautiful wife, Martine, and little old me, Nikichi Taifa. So again, support WPFW. So go on, Shafia.
The best things come in the smallest packages. Ain't that right, Sister Nikichi?
That's right.
Hey, yeah, you got it, girl, because we're both the same height. And, you know, we are listening to our guest, Shafia Mbalia and Kokai Patterson with the Imam Jamil Al-Amin Action Committee. And our show today is called From Martin Luther King to Imam Jamil Al-Amin, The Struggle Continues. And I just want to say the closest I think I came to H-Rap Brown during back in the day, I mean, this is a very tenuous connection. But I was on 14th Street at a Drum and Spear bookstore. Brother Kojo Anamdi was actually at the cash register during those days. But the bookstore was owned by Ralph Featherstone. And that's where I purchased my first African names book, where I adopted my name, Nikichi. But, you know, shortly after that, Ralph Featherstone and Shea Payne were really assassinated in the vehicle. They were driving go to Cambridge, Maryland.
That's right. They were heading to Cambridge. You were right. You were
right. It was a bombing in their car. So that's one of my earliest memories or recollections. I just wanted to go on and throw that out. But again, Martin Luther King, victim of COINTELPRO. H-Rap Brown, now known as Ma'am Jamil Al-Amin, victim of COINTELPRO. The Black Panther Party, victims of COINTELPRO. And so many more. And Shafia, I remember back in the day, we were part of the, what was it, National Task Force for COINTELPRO Litigation Research, what it was called. So what we're talking about is nothing new. We've been fighting and struggling against all of that. And it's just under new names and new terms today.
What I always say is we need to boycott. I'm going to say it again. Mm. The Montgomery bus boycott, it broke down the system. And
yes,
it won't take a year. We have to do a boycott, and it has to include the prisoners. Maybe it needs to be not paying for visits. Now, it has to be something including the prison. It's not going to take a year, and it's not going to take all of us. But we have to make a decision and do something.
Can I tell a little short story about the power that we have that we don't recognize that we do have? In that you all remember or understand that the recent dock workers strike that lasted 3 days, which would have shut down commerce into the United States from Maine through Mobile, Alabama. That's all of the produce, all of the products, all of the trade, all of the commerce on the East Coast. Well, do you know that from Wilmington, North Carolina, through Mobile, Alabama, the majority of those union locals are black workers? So what if, so when we, for example, if and when we would have a demand, we gonna shut down the port until y'all release Imam Jamil LME.
Absolutely.
You know, that's what that, black workers and local tents in San Francisco did that for a day around Mandela. They did it for a day around Mumia. They did it for around, what's the brother in, who was killed? Oscar, it was killed in San Francisco. This is what happened when we get that information.
Oscar Grant.
Mm-hmm. Oscar Grant. Yeah. That's when that information gets out and folks understand the power that we have when organized, when we have the information and we can sit and then we organize ourselves, then that's the power that we have. Mm-hmm. See, we're always told that we're powerless, but we are powerful because we are the essential workers. And if we apply that consciousness, we can apply that leverage.
So okay, if anybody wants, the number to call if you want to join this conversation is 202-588-0893. 202-588-0893. And we have one phone call. We'll come back to you, Nikichi. Go, we got one caller. You're on the air. Question or comment?
Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
This is Rick calling from Germany.
How did I guess that would be you, Rick? Come on back.
We missed you last week, Vic.
I just want to say, Roach, I called last week, but I hung up. The COINTELPRO didn't hang up on me last week, but I hung up because I thought the two-hour show was the bomb, and I should sit back and listen rather than speak my piece. Show this week is the same. I do believe I disagree with one point you have made. You say that nothing has changed since the 60s. I disagree with that, but things are still very harsh, and I believe the Constitution has been suspended not only for surveillance, but also for assassinations by the U.S. government of people, not only white domestic terrorists, not only Islamic terrorists, but black and Native American resistance movement who would create economic upheaval. I'm done, folks.
Okay, thanks, Rick, for calling in. You know, folks, I'm looking at this picture of Jamil Al-Amin with this big growth on the side of his face. And I saw him like the other picture. He was young, nice looking, 35 years old or so. And now these people risk their life and speak truth to power and put their life on the line. Now they need us. My wife said, we need demonstrations. Folks, we need you to call, to write. I wish you would have got to this before and we'd do some big thing on a continuous basis. And whoever filed that motion on his behalf for medical relief, please contact him and give him that information about Estelle versus Gamma, because that is a powerful piece they can use because this is a Supreme Court.
I'm sure that case is cited in the papers.
I hope it is.
It is the seminal Supreme Court case dealing with issues of medical neglect in prison. Yeah. But thank you for bringing that up, because most folks don't know about the case and the like. I just want to make a quick announcement before we go on. This is the Martin Luther King week, and there's going to be an event on Thursday, January 16th, called Drum Major for Justice in the Era of Trump. And yours truly, myself, Nikichi Taifa, will be moderating a phenomenal panel. It's include Father Ricardo Shepherd, of the Rector of the Episcopal Church of the Atonement, Attorney Cynthia Roseberry of the ACLU, Brother Lynn Dyson, who's the Director of the Multimedia Training Institute, and our dear brother, who's always a guest on WPFW, Tyrone Parker, founding executive director of the Alliance for Concerned Men. And that's going to be on Thursday, January 16th, 6:30 p.m. at the New Cultural Cafe at Studio W, 5073 East Capitol Street Southeast, inside the Episcopal Church of Potomac. And there's a virtual aspect to that as well. But I just want to say, when we talk about solutions and what we can do, this is one of the things we're going to be talking about this Thursday on Drum Major for Justice in the era of Trump. We're going to talk about solutions of what we can do to stop
there you go.
The words of Roach Brown, to stop all this joogie boogie going on. And so, you know, just wanted to let the WPFW audience know about that event. In addition to, again, Shafia, if you can mention the event that's the following day, Friday, January the 17th, in front of the Bureau of Prisons. You want to announce that one more time?
At 3 p.m. in Friday, in front of the Bureau of Prisons headquarters. I believe that's 320 First Street.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
320 First Street at 3 p.m., 320 First Street. At 3 p.m. Friday, in front of the Bureau of Prison headquarters, we are calling for the medical transfer for emergency medical care for Imam Jamil El-Amin, formerly known as H-Rap Brown. He has an undiagnosed growth that has been there for months that the local Tucson authorities refuse to, from what we understand, is that those in Tucson are getting very concerned, not only, I think, for his life, which some of us probably don't care about, but also for their lives, because, you know, folks are getting very, very, very concerned. You know, the population, the brothers up inside are getting very, very concerned that the local authorities are not treating this brother. He is not, despite the fact that this growth has gotten larger and larger, he cannot... He's losing ability to speak, and they're not doing. And the Bureau of Prisons is, which is responsible for their health care, is refusing to do treatment, to get him treatment. So we're calling for a medical transfer for him to come up to Butner, North Carolina, where there is a federal medical facility to get diagnosed and to get treatment. Okay. Their brothers and sisters up there, you know. Or listening out, waiting for, so that they can build support around him there. But we really, really need, you know, this brother's 81 years old. Mm-hmm. And if you see the picture.
They need to come home. He need to be at home.
He needs to come home to his family. He needs to come home. You know, these people, they parted, you know, every and sundry. And I'm not even going to raise a question about who else they get pardoned.
You can
do that, AKC. I'm not going to go there right now. I could go on and on and on.
On and on and on.
Coming in, who talking about who they going to pardon. But here you got folks like Imam Jamil El-Amin, and I do want to mention Leonard Peltier and Afia Siddiqui, who Biden does have the power to pardon. We call on Joseph Biden to pardon.
He pardoned his son.
He pardoned the other folks, and they should have. We want him to pardon Leonard Peltier. We want Afia Siddiqui to be pardoned. We cannot sit here and not call their name.
Yes.
We are in solidarity with them. We know that Imam Jamil is not the only one who's been treated this way.
Leonard Peltier
has gone through health issues as well. Afia Siddiqui has been mistreated as well. But even if they had and they've been wrongfully convicted, they need to be home. They need to be out. You got all these so-called these oath keepers and Proud Boys and all these other folks running around. Our folks need to come home. They need to medical transfer and release. We want the federal authorities to put pressure on the state authorities. Imam Jamil is a state prisoner in federal custody. This is why you do not hear us saying that, calling on Biden to pardon him. Biden does not have the jurisdiction, nor do other federal officials have the jurisdiction to free him. But the state of Georgia does. Georgia State Board of
Pardons
and Parole is the authority that has the power to give a medical reprieve in the state of Georgia is what is needed for Iman Jimmy to get out. And he has met all of the conditions for that.
The name of our show this morning is From Martin Luther King to Iman Jamil Alameen, The Struggle Continues. Yeah. And his name to us is H.R.A.P. Brown. But he came up with Burn Baby Burn during the same time when he said, I'm saying it loud, I'm black and I'm proud.
Yeah.
During the civil rights there were some slogans coming out. And this man's statement of Burn Baby Burn led him for them to harass him, to attack him, because they're saying he was inciting riots and all across the country. Folk, irregardless, he's still a human being. He's a father, he's a husband, and he's a brother. And when it's your time to die, you get closer to that. Let's let these people die with some dignity. They risked their life for us. He jeopardized his future for us. So we got to do whatever we can. And by you saying what you said, young lady, by he's a state prisoner. The governor of Atlanta can pardon him. The governor
cannot. The governor of Georgia cannot. It
Why
has
not?
To be the state. That's the statute.
Oh, okay. That's
it
a pardon.
Boogie. State board.
Boogie.
Right.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. You would think that the governor could do it.
You got to jump through that hoop, jump through this hoop.
There you go. Okay.
That's right.
Somebody trying to get some welfare. They go from cubicle to cubicle to cubicle to cubicle, and nothing gets done, you know. And we go back. I just want to tell this quick story. And when Martin Luther King had the Great March on Washington, I was a young kid. And I went down to the Great March on Washington. They called it Mud City because it had rained. And it was mud everywhere. Resurrection City, I'm sorry. And it was mud.
I remember that. It rained.
Yeah. Me and my crew from Southeast, we didn't go down there to march or anything. We went down there to try to find some girls to steal, to do whatever. But when we got down there, the spirit just grabbed us and some young girls started talking to us and this and that. We saw, oh, these some nice people. And before you know it, we sitting down eating peanut butter and jelly sandwiches with them. And, you know, we sucked right into the movement. Right after that, I wind up on drugs. So when we talk about the conditions that exist now are the same conditions that exist today. You know, that the drugs are still there. We still got young black men who confused like I was back in the day that need some guidance, you know, the conditions and statutes and the laws and everything. The foundation of this country is what I'm saying has not changed. We might see other people trying to do some stuff, but the laws, as we're talking about, has not changed. I'm sorry, Roach, go ahead.
No, go ahead. You're doing your thing. We got a few minutes. I just want to share this, that when Martin Luther King got killed, I was in Lawton. And what you heard all over the country, there were riots. But what wasn't reported is that the prisons rioted.
Yes.
We had several big riots inside of Lawton. As a result of that, I wrote a poem, a play, called A Tribute to Martin Luther King. And would you believe the prison took my play, confiscated it, because I didn't have permission to use government materials to write my play.
Wow.
But we were able to perform the play. I'm going to recite the closing poem in this play. All right, Mike. It was called A Tribute to Dr. Martin Luther King. And a young man named George Stewart drew a painting of an old black lady standing on the corner with her stockings around her legs with two paper bags. And she heard
that
King had got killed. And she was in the Ebony magazine. I took that picture and went in the cell. And here's what I came up with. Okay, Mike. Well, Lord, they's done it again, and times ain't the way you want them, Lord. They say nobody knows the troubles I've seen. Lord, that nobody must be you, because everybody knows I've seen nothing but trouble and killing and suffering of black folk, and I's cried for them that's done gone. Some I's didn't know personal like, Lord. Like the dreamer. What for it happened, Lord? What for? I cried when they got mega. I cried when they bummed the chillin'. Now they's got the dreamer. And Oz can't cry no more. He dropped in your place, Lord, like the one you got for us up in glory. Where is our place at, Lord? Is it anywhere? Oz are mighty tired, and they's killing them so young. And Oz can't cry no more. Can you hear me, Lord? Oz can't cry no more. Carry me home, Lord. Carry me home. And that was a part of the poem, huh?
That was very inspiring, folks. And I'm sorry the government confiscated that. You inspired me. If I can just share, I got a half a minute poem that I wrote back in eighth grade when Martin Luther King was assassinated. I'm just going by memory. It's real quick. It goes, there once was a man, he was king of our land, but they shot him down and took off his crown and said, what y'all gonna do now? Mm. Well, we went down 14 feet and scared off the pig beat, and everyone was told that anything without soul would be burned and looted for keep. Then a funeral came for the man who had won fame. He had preached nonviolence, but when he died, there was no silence. I will go on to say that he will be back one day with victory in his hands, and we are proud that he was our man. It goes on and on. That's all I remember. The struggle is continuing. For Martin Luther King, Imam Jamil Alameen, the struggle continues. Back to you, Ro.
I just want to say a little story.
Excuse me. We have 2 minutes left before we got to leave. So can everybody come on, give some closing comments. We got 2 minutes. Start with Kaka, then you, Sister Sophia.
Absolutely. You know, again, you know, freedom ain't free. And there's a lot of people who need to be involved in this movement that we're dealing with. And we say the same conditions exist today that exist back then. We have political prisoners. Imam Jamil Alameen is not the only one. So please, JamilActionNetwork.org.
Go ahead, Sister Sophia. You got it.
I want to just say that to repeat Kakai, that we really ask folks to come out Friday, 3 p.m. The Bureau of Prisons. When I was a teenager, I had the opportunity to meet Imam Jamil H.R.A.P. Brown then. I did it. But I was inspired because one of my teachers was had been a student nonviolent coordinate committee member. And my next door neighbors were from what had been activists in SNCC. And they would tell us stories as high school students about the courage, the principles, the character of Imam Jamil Alameen. And it was that inspired me throughout my life to carry on.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Our time is running out.
I just want us to be clear. We live in a country that is killing black men every day. No one is hardly ever paying for it. In Tulsa, Oklahoma, Black Wall Street, that happened in every state in this country. So be realistic, people. Nothing is going to come to us unless we demand it, and holding our money is what people understand.
Our time is up. I want to thank Dr. Kaka Patterson for joining us, Sophia Mabala, and of course, our co-host, none other than the dynamic Nkechi Taifa, and my wife, Merton. Thank you, Mike. Boy, you're right.
Thank y'all.
We're going to close now. We're going to close now and see you next week. We're going to close with Marvin Gaye, Abraham, Martin, and John.
Yes. Thank you so much. But it seems a good
dial. Yeah. I just looked around and he was gone. Has anybody here seen my old friend John? Can you tell me where he's gone? You know, he freed a lot of people, but it seems the good die young. Just looked around and he was gone. Oh yeah. but it seems the good die young. Yeah, I just looked around and he was gone.
Greetings. WPFW is pleased to announce the relaunch of our major donor program, now known as the Jazz and Justice Circle. If you gave $1,000 last year or so far this year, you are automatically enrolled in this cherished group of listener members, and we thank you. Benefits of your membership are at WPFWFM.org under the Support Us tab at the top of the homepage is the Jazz and Justice Circle. Interested in joining this select group? Please consider a donation of $1,000 or more online at WPFWFM.org. Your donation helps WPFW build a better world one broadcast at a time.
Economic, political, and military decisions in Washington, D.C. impact this entire country and world. And yet corporate media offers few facts, history, or people's voices about these important issues impacting our lives. I'm Esther Ivarum. Welcome to On the Ground, Voices of Resistance from the Nation's Capital, here on WPFW 89.3, Fridays at 10 a.m. We cover local, national, and international social justice activism, including those who come to D.C. from across the nation or from across the world to speak truth to power. Whether it's the war machine, climate change, the movement for black lives, healthcare, education, the economy, housing, voting, corporate power, immigration, criminal justice, or environmental justice. Check out On the Ground, Voices of Resistance from the Nation's Capital, Fridays at 10 a.m., here on your station for jazz and justice.
We're back! WPFW is excited to announce the return of the Social Justice Calendar, your go-to weekly update on the latest events, actions, and initiatives promoting equity, justice, and change across our community. The calendar's mission is to connect you with the heartbeat of grassroots activism in the DMV. Each week, we'll spotlight rallies, workshops, forums, and community actions happening across the region. If you have an event to share, submissions can be emailed to socialjustice@wpfw.org. Please include the name, date, and address of said event in a format that is no longer than a sentence or two on Thursday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time, at least 2 weeks in advance of your event date. Space is limited, so submissions are considered in the order that they are received. The Social Justice Calendar is yet another way that WPFW connects, engages, and uplifts our community as we build a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Hey, Chris Garlock here.
And I'm Elise Bryant.
Tune in Thursdays at 1 p.m.
for the Labor Heritage Power Hour.
Every week, we explore labor arts and culture.
As anarchist Emma Goldman said so famously, if I can't dance, I don't want to be part of your revolution.
And that's how we feel about labor music, films,
theater, poetry,
labor history, labor art,
spoken word, basically anything that brings labor and the arts together.
So join us for the Labor Heritage Power Hour
here on WPFW 89.3 FM.
Your station for jazz and justice.
That's the Labor Heritage Power Hour.
Thursdays from 1 to 2 p.m.
The heart and soul
of the American labor movement.
The international unites the whole darn human race.
What do Angela Davis, Mehdi Hasan, Ibrahim X. Kendi, V, formerly Eve Ensler, Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib, Sonia Sanchez, Amy Goodman, Medea Benjamin, Mosab Abu Toha, Congresswoman Cori Bush, Noura Erekat, Congressman Jamal Bowman, Farafina Khan, Linda Sarsour, Isra Shakir, Congresswoman Ilhan Omar, Sweet Honey in the Rock, and WPFW have in common? Well, Bus Boys and Poets 2025 Peace Ball, Voices of Justice and Liberation, an event featuring live music, speeches, performances, food.